This is the last day of this June 2018 7-day session. And we'll take up another koan today. This is from the Blue Cliff record, Ekigan Roku, and it's number 67, the great Bodhisattva Fu lectures on the Diamond Sutra. Here's how it reads. Emperor Wu of Liang asked the great Bodhisattva Fu to expound the Diamond Sutra. Fu mounted the platform, struck the lectern with his baton, and descended from the platform. The emperor was dumbfounded. Master Qi said to him, "Does your majesty understand?" The emperor replied, "No, I do not understand." Master Qi said, "The great Bodhisattva has expounded the sutra thoroughly." Give me a minute, if you don't mind sitting quietly and waiting. So we have in this koan three protagonists in a way. We have the emperor, we have the Bodhisattva Fu, and we have the Diamond Sutra. First, about the Diamond Sutra. They used to think that for hundreds of years, people thought that the earliest printed book was the Gutenberg Bible, from the Middle Ages. And then they found in the Dunhuang Caves in China a copy of the Diamond Sutra that had been printed some thousand years earlier. So now it seems to be undisputed that the Diamond Sutra is the first known book to have been to come into print. The title is the full title is the Vajra Chetaka Prajnaparamita Sutra, or the Diamond Cutter Sutra, which is a small book belonging to a much greater collection called the Maha Prajnaparamita Canon, or Sutras. What we do, the heart of perfect wisdom, Maha Prajnaparamita is just the short kernel of the larger Maha Prajnaparamita, which consists of many volumes. And this Diamond Cutter Sutra is a part of that. It's a short part, a very short sutra, and it is known above all for its exposition of the doctrine of shunyata, that is emptiness, no thingness. Some of the entries in it, some of these are some of the entries in it. No bodhisattva who is a real bodhisattva cherishes the idea of an ego entity, a personality, a being, or a separated individuality. So in other words, no self. That's the obvious corollary to no thingness or emptiness, shunyata. Another section, if a bodhisattva cherishes the idea of an ego entity, a personality, a being, or a separated individuality, he is consequently not a bodhisattva. And then third, those who find consolation in limited doctrines involving the conception of an ego entity, a personality, a being, or a separated individuality, are unable to accept, receive, study, recite, and openly explain this discourse. Well, of course, anyone can read this sutra now that it's been in print for 1,500 years or something, but understanding it is something else, because of this very lofty teaching of no thingness. These lines will be familiar to some of you, attributed to the Buddha. Thus shall ye think of all this fleeting world, a star at dawn, a bubble in a stream, a flash of lightning in a summer cloud, a flickering lamp, a phantom, and a dream. This is the evanescence of reality. Nothing to hold on to. Nothing that can be called a thing, which implies stability or substance or permanence. Flux. The Diamond Sutra is all about flux. The flux of things, the flux of the mind, the flux of self. This Emperor Wu I was just reading a book called Buddhism in Chinese History, and they have here about Emperor Wu. Just a little background. Buddhism really took China by storm in between 500 and 800 A.D. It was disparaged early on as a foreign religion, which it was. It was from India. The Buddha was Indian. But once it gained the favor of the court and the elite, then it really took off. And the emperor who promoted it the most was this Emperor Wu of the Liang Dynasty, who reigned from 502 to 549. It says here that he himself took the Buddhist vows and on several occasions literally gave himself to a Buddhist temple, requiring his ministers to, quote, ransom him with huge gifts to the temple. On the Buddha's birthday in 504, he ordered the imperial relatives, the nobles, and the officials to forsake Taoism and embrace Buddhism. We're not going to introduce that in our Buddha's birthday. In 517, he decreed the destruction of the temples of the Taoists, whose religion had steadily grown in power and influence, partly through its selective borrowing from Buddhism, and he ordered the Taoist adepts to return to lay life. He patterned himself after the new Buddhist model of kingly behavior, and his efforts won him titles which suggest the fusion of Chinese and Buddhist political sanctions. He was called Emperor Bodhisattva, the Savior Bodhisattva, and the Bodhisattva Son of Heaven. And now, this so-called great Bodhisattva Fu, his name is Fu Daishi. His dates were about the same time, 497 to 569. I'm reading now from Zen Dust. This is the only source we had for biographical information about the masters until Andy Ferguson came out with his Zen's Chinese Heritage, which I think is even more complete. But this Zen Dust was a tremendous work. And we're reading here, so many marvelous stories and legends have grown up around Fu Daishi that it is difficult to separate fact from fancy. The following story of his life is based upon his traditional biography. Just a note, Fu Daishi is, Roshi Kapwa used to say, is always considered one of the three most illustrious, enlightened lay people in Buddhist history. It was Fu Daishi, Vimalakirti, and Layman Pong. As a youth, he was a kind and simple fellow who devoted his time largely to fishing. When he had filled his basket with fish, he would put it into the deep part of the river, saying, "Those who want to go, go. Those who want to stay, stay." The people of his village naturally thought him somewhat daft. At 16, he married, and he and his wife had two sons. When he was 24, he was sitting one day on the riverbank fishing when a foreign mendicant monk, that would be a Buddhist monk, came along and spoke to him about the teachings of the Buddha. Fu Daishi was deeply moved and immediately threw away all his fishing implements. He now built a little hut for himself and his family under a pair of sala trees, and he attained some degree of enlightenment as the result, During the day, he and his wife worked in their fields raising vegetables or hired themselves out as manual laborers. At night, Fu Daishi talked about the Buddha Dharma to anyone who cared to come and join him. This would be the exciting new religion in China. It's just starting to gain traction. But there were some real strange practices involved in these early years. For example, asceticism, which the Buddha himself had rejected. But here Fu Daishi took it up in earnest and says, after subjecting himself to severe ascetic discipline for 7 years, he had visions in which three Buddhas appeared to him. But the district official thought him possessed of a demon and locked him up in prison. 10 days later, when the official went to see the Daishi, he found him well and in good spirits, though he had had no food during the entire interval. Well, actually, seriously, fasting can leave you quite high, quite buoyant spirits. But the official, this government official, was conscience-stricken, and he had him released and told him to go back home. Now we're in the Liang Dynasty, and a time when his district was stricken with famine. The Daishi sold his house and fields, and with the money obtained food to feed the starving villagers. In 534, the Daishi dispatched a disciple with a letter setting forth his religious views to the emperor. Here we are, back to the Emperor Wu. This was the emperor, the same emperor, who had this interview with Bodhidharma when Bodhidharma arrived there, in this famous, possibly most famous exchange of any koan, where the emperor told him of all of his marvelous donations to Buddhism, all his contributions, and then asked him what is the essence. And Bodhidharma said, there's no sacred teaching, just emptiness. And the emperor, not understanding what the emptiness meant, said, well, wait a minute, who are you standing before me? And Bodhidharma said, I don't know. This was the same Emperor Wu. And then the emperor commanded Fu Daishi to appear at court for an audience. He was much impressed with him and ordered him to live near the capital. It must have been at this time when he was there at the court. When the Fu Daishi was there at the court, then this took place with today's koan. Many eminent monks now came to Fudaishi's gate, and the emperor summoned him for several more audiences. In 535, though, he returned to his old home and built a Buddha hall and a pagoda under the salat trees there. That's where he had come to awakening. In 548, the Daishi gave away all his fields and estates to the people. Remember, this is a layperson and obviously someone of means. The following month, he told his followers that he was going to go without food in order to purify his mind and body, and that on the eighth day of the fourth month, he would immolate himself by fire as an offering to the three treasures for the benefit of all living creatures on earth. He hoped thus to bring an end to the suffering the people were undergoing as a result of the military disasters at the time. Remember, what I'm reading here is the original record, going back to those days, pretty much. When the day for his immolation came, 19 of his disciples wanted to do it instead. He finally, in order to persuade him not to carry out his intention, he finally yielded to their pleas. Some years later, when famine again stalked the land, the Daishi worked in the fields with his followers, gathering grass and acorns for gruel. Who among us can imagine what famine is? Everything he had, he gave to the poor and the starving. During the years that followed The Daishi continued his ministrations to the poor, held great religious meetings regularly to exorcise evil spirits and prevent misfortunes, and continued to purify his mind and body by extreme ascetic practices, hoping thus to bring peace and ease to all beings. Exorcise evil spirits. There's one other nugget here from this book, Buddhism and Chinese History, about the translator, the original translator of the Diamond Sutra and many other Buddhist texts, Kumarajiva, who is widely considered possibly the greatest of translator of all times. This Kumarajiva had been held in captivity in northwest China in the year 401, and had long enough to have learned Chinese. He was from Turkestan, and while he was there, the local warlord had held him for his charismatic power. So this was a time you can hardly imagine, with belief in the supernatural and all kinds of things like that. Fudaishi died in 569 at the age of 73. Everyone considered him to have been an incarnation of Maitreya. Maitreya is supposed to be the Buddha of the next world cycle. He had never taken monastic orders, but remained a layman during his entire life. He was often portrayed in painting and sculpture with his wife and two boys, a tall figure with a long beard, wearing a Confucian hat, a Buddhist robe, and Taoist shoes. These were the three main creeds at the time, the native creed of Confucianism and Taoism, naturalist path, and the new foreign religion, Buddhism. He's credited with the invention of the revolving bookcase for holding sutras, which, like the prayer wheel, can assist those who turn it to attain salvation, no matter how ignorant they may be. That's the only material I've ever seen or found about Fudaishi. So this is a meeting of two formidable men, one in the world of the Dharma and one in the world of politics, Emperor Wu. And now back to the case. Emperor Wu of Liang asked the great Bodhisattva Fu to expound the Diamond Sutra. Fu mounted the platform, struck the lectern with his baton, and descended from the platform. The emperor was dumbfounded. This, of course, is the nub of the koan, the real essence of it. And essence for sure, because the essence of the Dharma, the essence of Buddhism and of Zen, is this teaching of no thingness, emptiness, which is the theme, the predominant theme of the Diamond Sutra. How does essence function? we have this pairing of ideas in Buddhism, essence and function. And there's no function without essence. There's no essence without function. You can't have just emptiness. There's no such thing as just emptiness, as an abstraction apart from the world, this functioning world of phenomena, of functioning of human beings and things, creatures of every kind, things, inanimate things. It's all the functioning of this emptiness. As a feature of emptiness, the Diamond Sutra also emphasized neither existence nor non-existence. One of its most famous lines is, "There is no Dharma to be preached," and that is called Dharma preaching. Also, arouse the mind without its abiding anywhere. Here's another one that appears in one of the koans, number 28 in the Mumonkan, where the old woman with the tea stand confronts the great scholar, the great authority on the Diamond Sutra, and when he asks for some treats there, she says, "All right, I'll give you that, the treats, if you can answer this question." And then she posed this question from the Diamond Sutra. She says, it says in the Diamond Sutra, "Arouse the mind without its abiding anywhere." And then she turned to looked up at this august scholar and said, "So tell me, it says present mind is unattainable, past mind is unattainable, future mind is unattainable. With which mind will you be taking these treats?" And he was completely overturned with confusion, and that's what drove him to the Zen master, where he had the encounter with the master blowing out the candle. Another translation says, instead of the Fudaishi mounted the platform, struck the lectern with his stick, it says he mounted the platform and shook the desk once. Does it matter? It's all the functioning of this essential nature. Just Fudaishi mounting the platform could have been enough. There it is. But all of this left the emperor dumbfounded. When I was working on this in Doksan with Roshi Kaplow, he compared it to a koan in the Mumonkan where a non-Buddhist came to the Buddha and said, "What is beyond both words and silence?" And the Buddha just... No, that was it was to Mahakashapa. Excuse me. This non-Buddhist comes to Mahakashapa. That's the Buddha's Dharma heir. And said, "What is beyond both speech and silence?" To which Mahakashapa just sat unmoving, sat still. Here we have this other element of sound. The Mahakashapa's silence would more likely have gone over the heads of the people in attendance. They would possibly just be waiting. When is he going to respond to the question? Or that was his response, that silence. Here, Fudaishi made this concession to those, to the emperor. He wanted to give him something, you know. The essence of the Dharma is nothing. All right, I'll still give you something. So here. But the emperor was dumbfounded. Actually, any sound is the fusion of both form and emptiness. He says, we say in the Prajnaparamita, form is only emptiness, emptiness only form. Form is no other than emptiness, emptiness no other than form. A sound is a thing. It's a sound. We have a word for it. But at the same time, it's impermanent. It passes. Here it is. And now it's gone. But then everything is this integration of these two aspects of our nature. Each one of us is that. Form, formlessness, evanescence. And now we have a new character who steps up on the stage, a Master Chi. We don't know much about this Master Chi from the case. There's nothing explaining who he is. But turning to our commentary in the Blue Cliff Record, Yuan Wu, the author of the Blue Cliff Record, tells us that that the Fudaishi had gone into the capital of the province, Liang province, gone into Nanking, and to sell fish. And it was at that time that the Emperor Wu happened to request that this Master Chi expound the Diamond Sutra. Apparently, Master Chi was a prominent monk at the time who the emperor had confidence in. But this Master Chi said, no, this poor wayfarer cannot expound it. But in the marketplace, there is a Mahasattva Fu, that is Fudaishi, who is able to expound the sutra. And so the emperor issued an imperial order to summon Fudaishi to the inner palace, which sets the stage for this. But now we're back to Master Chi. So Master Chi asks the emperor, does your majesty understand? Even though he probably could see that the emperor was dumbfounded at Fudaishi striking the lectern. The emperor replied, no, I do not understand. But to his credit, he's honest. And then Master Chi helped him a little. He said, the great Bodhisattva has expounded the sutra thoroughly. There's a commentary in by Huan Wu. He said, Mahasattva Fu only brought up the transcendental mainspring and briefly showed the sword point to let people know the ultimate intent, directly standing it up for you like a mile-high wall. It was only appropriate that he should be subject to Master Chi's ignorance of good and bad in saying, the Mahasattva has expounded the sutra thoroughly. Indeed, he had a good intent but didn't get a good response. It was like a cup of fine wine which was diluted with water by Master Chi, like a bowl of soup being polluted by Master Chi with a piece of rat shit. So the comment, if we could say, if only he just let it go at or but then the words, the sutra has been expounded thoroughly. Well, enough words. We'll stop now and recite the four vows.
Time.